we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covet for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has shifted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not public. Mistakes are buried, not headlines. Its percentages are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake! I drink it up!
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Setting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Today on Cold Reality Radio. My guest will be of the Corporation Nation, Clint Richardson, on one possibly of his, well, maybe not one of his last interviews, I'm sure of, but I do have the pleasure of having him on the program today. So we'll get started with Clint shortly. The bread and circus of the Democratic the insanity of that last night, taking and going to a new level of deception and just grossness. Hillary is gross. Bernie Sanders is a garbage man who talks funny. And O'Malley, he's just, you got to have that third moron to fill out fill in the idiocy. You know, the third wheel, if you will. Trump this week and Jeb and all that other garbage on the other side, on the right, showing that we live in an absolute garbage society that needs to be absolutely and totally changed, if that's even possible. We're going to discuss that more with Clint Richardson today. So, as with any of my, all of my broadcasts here, I'm pretty much all over the road. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be doing this, but it is my pleasure today to have someone who has done the homework, someone who has taken the time to do the research and really, really break things down in a way that still is very, very confusing. But then again, that's the system that we've been brought into. We are a human resource for the United States Corporation. And Clint has a number of documentaries. We're going to talk about that tonight. You can see him online. You can hear his archive. He will only be doing a number of shows over on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and then he's going to move on to other things, and he'll talk about that as well today. It's a very important broadcast. One of the most important that I've ever done, because there's not too many people out there that really break it down in the way that Clint has done, and that is it's kind of priceless in our society today to have someone who can take the time to really, really read, not only read the Bible, but also to read the all of our founding documents and find out that it really doesn't even apply to us. And Judas goats like Mr. Alex Jones, who I got to endorse my program a number of years ago, will tell you that, that Constitution and the Bill of Rights really still apply to you. But it is a farce, and it does not apply. And that's one of the sneaky little things that they do to us in this system. So I'm going to go ahead and bring my guest in. Don't know how to do this. Yes. Okay, we're going to get some sound levels. Let us know how everything sounds out there, and then we're going to go ahead and talk to Clint about his journey, which I see has been quite different from mine. In a few ways, but it's always good to hear a different perspective, and it's really been an eye opener to get Clint's perspective on the world that we live in, and it's very interesting to say the least. Clint, do I have you there?
Greetings.
Okay, let me get your sound level up, and then we'll. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Are you testing sound? Is that what we're doing?
Sound is fine. We're good. We're live. This show's never really truly been about any kind of sequence or order, so I apologize. I've been doing this for a little while. We've done, some roundtable podcasts together before. And, I started kind of doing my thing back on Blog Talk Radio, and then I graduated to Oracle Broadcasting, which was at some point, I believe, bought out by Alex Jones. I don't know if you're familiar with Oracle and some of the...
Sure.
Okay.
I used to be really good pals with, the minor 49er, Hal Anthony over at Oracle.
Okay, so are you still in contact? I mean, he's very interesting in his understanding of the law and how we've been deceived by it as well.
Yeah, he's an interesting character and still battling about mining rights and everything. So
right, okay, so again, there's so many people in this arena of awakening. I hate to say that it's a freedom movement or that it's more of a bow movement in some ways. and you come along and you bring a different perspective. If I can say that.
I like to say I'm an equal opportunity offender.
Okay. All right. And it's very interesting. And our paths may have crossed, face to face if I had gone to the Free Your Mind conference this year, which is not that far away from me. I did go, I want to say it was maybe the second one, but the only, finding out some of the things, just having conversation with you, really maybe one of the only things that would have been a really good connection type experience would have been to see you speak and either walk up and talk to you or whatever, but that didn't happen, but thanks to Greg and his ability to kind of get out there and mix with different people and bringing his different flavor of things, oil not being a fossil fuel and that whole manipulation that opens up a lot of people's eyes, that opened up your eyes, Jan, a number of other different people, and so he's kind of been, you know, a catalyst for, you know, me meeting you and speaking with you. So your journey is not coming to an end, but it is coming to an end on RBN because you have said that, hey, I've done and said, I've covered everything that needs to be covered at you know, over at different times, you know, we have to kind of repeat ourselves because in a way, the people out there, have been repeaters and they have learned things from repeaters. So in a sense that we have to repeat.
Yeah, I never worry about that. I felt like I, you know, like you said, I'd sort of done my duty and almost 500 shows that are all, you know, archived now. And, you know, my main interest was in the language because it turns out, you know, as I found out during this little journey, it's the language. Nothing else really matters because if we don't know the meanings of our words, then our words have no meaning. We literally speak this, you know, this alternative language. We don't even realize we're doing it. And meanwhile, these guys are hearing and officially recording the old Latin terms of the words we're using. And that's why we're getting in trouble. That's why we don't understand why nothing seems to work in our favor and what, you know, what we have no idea that we're sort of enslaved to this system of words. And so that's what I've been working on for so long is sort of I don't even want to call it a book anymore because I know what these words mean, but I'm not publishing because that means to make public, you know, all these different things. I'm like, holy crap. So I started calling it a variety show. I'm like, I don't want to do a variety show anymore. I don't want to have some guy talking about fluoride one day and having some guy talk about this the next day. And I kind of want to be more specialized, if you will. And so, you know, when I started writing this book so long ago, and it's over 2,000 pages now, you know, as soon as I found language, as soon as I actually started understanding that it's the very language that deceives us,
mm-hmm.
and that is an old concept that's been around for who knows how long. Some of the quotes I've found have been amazing. I decided that's where it's at. That's just the language. It nothing else really matters. Ultimately, if you don't have the words, you know, and that's essentially where I'm sort of stuck at right now, in a good way,
mm-hmm.
because again, you know, you talk about all these different things, but the question becomes, why are they legal, right? Why is it happening? And it's because of the words, because of the law. It's because the word license, for instance, means anarchy. It means lawlessness.
Mm-hmm.
License is permission to do something that's illegal or unlawful, right? So you start figuring out these things. You figure out why these guys can commit crimes, why they can give themselves massive expense accounts and paychecks and everything, why there's so much money out there in investment funds. Well, it's all legal. Legal means, you know, permission to break the law. So it's just been an amazing sort of journey in that regard.
So as I sit here and I watch this dog and pony bread and circus of the debates on the right and on the left, do these people know what these words mean?
Judges certainly do. I would say that politicians do as well. Most of them are attorneys. All of our presidents have been attorneys. I remember interviewing, what's her name from California, who was running for treasurer out there. And I'm like, you know, don't you, you know, I look at the past four positions that have been filled, and they've all been attorneys. And I say, well, don't you think there's maybe a problem with attorneys occupying, you know, the offices of government? Is there a problem with the fact, you know, I used to think it was a quote-unquote conspiracy, and the, you know, everybody's looking for the conspiracies and the you know, that sort of thing. And again, if everything's legal, then there is no real conspiracy, and that's the problem, is the government is a conspiracy. This is one of the things I figured out along the way, is that what you have when you're talking about a conspiracy, you're talking about a plan between two or more people to basically harm or defraud or injure someone else. To injure just means to bring into law. And so what you have is a conspiracy. It's called the United States, a conspiracy between 50 private states or several states. And people, and that was designed to put us all into this sort of public situation, this citizenship, which several different people in history have said was actually worse than slavery, because at least slaves knew that they were in chains, knew that they were bound, but in our system, we're insurety, so which is insurance basically. We insure that the citizenship does acts according to law, and so yeah, it's just I feel sober right now, Charlie. I've never felt so sober in my life because I got to a point where I totally understood. I now get it. I now understand what the system is. And Greg, you know, you mentioned Greg. Mm-hmm. You know, he always talks about it being a pirate cove, and that's exactly what it is. It's nothing else. It's a confidence game, actually, if you were to put an accurate term on it. It's just a confidence game where confidence means trust, and if anybody's familiar with trust law or the law of agency, then you'll understand what that truly means, where we're acting in a trust capacity or an agency capacity. And everything we do is for our principle, which is the United States. And really what it boils down to and what I figured out is that we have no land. The reason we're always paying taxes, we're doing everything against our own best interest, we're working for someone else instead of ourselves, is because we have no land. All land has been taken by the pirates, which are these private people, essentially, that make up the states, who then made up the United States, and then the United States makes the United States citizenship. But these private people aren't United States citizens. They're private. And they're the landholders. They're landlords, if you will. And the whole game has been, the whole birth certificate game has been simply to steal everyone's land, because what the birth certificate does is it steals or corrupts the blood in attainder. It's voluntary, unfortunately, which makes it even more difficult. But it takes the ability of the man to be an heir, because that, you know, if you actually start reading the law books, you'll see that there's all kinds of ways to pass on land to your children through will, through prescription. There's all kinds of different ways, but the one way that actually counts, that makes you an heir, is, of course, blood. That's the ultimately recognized, you know, every law in the world is going to recognize that. And so what they've done is they've corrupted the blood. They've caused the parents to put us into a birth situation. You know, you're born into a nation. You become the people of the nation. You're no longer of your parents. Your parents give up their paternal rights, making you an infant of unknown parentage. Born in a foundling hospital, you're found in the District of the United States as a treasure on the sea, and you get a citizenship, and all of a sudden we're just all walking around, even if we have a home, with a title that's imperfect, with a defective title, that's all we can have, because we're United States citizens, which actually makes us foreigners in any state that we reside in. And so we're walking around as foreigners, basically. We need permission to do everything, license to do everything, because we're foreigners. We're from the United States, that little district. And so they've stolen our capacity to walk out of the system. Where can we go? There's nowhere to go. Everybody says, I want to walk out of this system. I'm just going to stop participating. Yeah, well, where are you going to go? Because you have no land. Your land has been stolen from you legally. Keep bearing in mind.
Nothing. I heard within a couple weeks. We can't own nothing, ever.
Absolutely. We own. I mean, the word own is even a trick word. Every word is a trick. That's the thing. And they all go back to cheat. They all go back to trick. They all go back to magic or wordcraft, or, you know, it's all the interesting thing about the dictionaries is that they're sort of an as above, so below type of notion. So if I look at the word above or the word below, any word, it's going to be related. So every word in the legal dictionary is basically the same word. It's like one big giant definition broken up into parts. So it's a circular system, in other words. It's not natural.
Right.
And it's a trap. And so, yeah, we literally, I mean, I've been trying to get that across to people. I was like, look, you guys, we have nowhere to go because everything's been stolen from us, specifically our blood right or our blood inheritance. We have nowhere to go. They've been tricked into acting what the Bible would say is acting in sin, and therefore we're sinners and we're, you know, not able to self-govern. It's just really screwed up thing. So I feel sober. I feel like, okay, I'm on the top of the mountain now. I can see everything and how it interconnects. Now it's time to sort of focus on this, figure out how to break free of it and actually clear my name, if you will.
So I'm looking at this, I watch the Tell Live Vision, and I see all these different things on there, and I hear the propaganda, and it's like I'm totally disconnected from it. So I see, you know, I don't see it as well as you do. And that's what makes, you know, this all very fascinating learning experience. But I look at that and I see, you know, people or whatever, the 25 most interesting people. And I'm like, I'm not even going to look through there because I know that it's just a bunch of star fucking, really.
Yeah.
And then I think to myself, God, what if that was real and we actually had real interesting people in there and that beast from Germany wasn't on the Time magazine, another globalist rag. You know, people like yourself would be one of the 25 most interesting people. And that would be, where is this just society when people that, you know, really done a lot of work, and there's a lot of good people out there that have done a lot of good work, but they are still, you know, they still think that they're moving forward. Like last night watching the John Lennon, look, you know, for the music, we're just kind of got in and we're sitting here and we tune in and I'm like, don't they know that they killed this guy? that the system hated him for what he was doing, against the war movement, waking people up to, in a sense. Now, I could be wrong about that. That could be like a total distraction, but a misunderstanding on my part. You know, I've heard you say revolution a number of times. Well, if you're in a revolution, then you ultimately come back to where you started.
Well, and I think that's part of the, I think we've got to start realizing, I think it was Roosevelt in the 30s who said that if it happens in politics, you can bet that it was planned that way, right? So if you're talking, I think revolution is built into the system. I think after so many cycles, so many phoenixes rising from the ashes, so many empires being built, destroyed, and rebuilt, I don't look at it as something that is random at all, because you actually see a cycle. You've got the Titler cycle, and you've got there's another cycle that shows that every nation lasts about between 200 and 230 years, which is right where we are. And that's the time it takes to just absolutely go into democracy and corruption, where in democracy people, you know, as opposed to a perfect oligarchy, which people think is a bad thing, I'm not so sure anymore, comparing it to democracy, which, according to Plato, is one step above, in his five regimes, is one step above total tyranny and degradation, right? So we're in the democracy phase, where people start voting themselves, you know, the use of the public money, and so the public, quote-unquote, doesn't get any benefit anymore, because it's all the, you know, it's who controls the vote. And so, yeah, it's I see it as a, again, revolution. That means that has the notion of a circular movement of going back to where you started. We're going to revolve one time, and the Phoenix is going to rise again somewhere else. Essentially, it's just Rome,
exactly.
The Roman Empire, you know, whatever the current militarized portion of the law of nations is, that's what, you know, that's what revolves. It's that's what comes and goes and comes and goes, because I think eventually, like right now, I know there's a lot of military people that know that something is very, very wrong, but they're mercenaries. I mean, I'm sorry to say it. Like I said, I'm an equal opportunity offender at this point. I only go by what the law tells me, and the law tells me. Webster's 1828 dictionary tells me, just about every legal dictionary tells me, that a mercenary or a prostitute is someone who sells themselves for money, or will is a base hireling, in other words, someone who will accept money to work for the landlords and ensure their property rights. And that's what the United States is, by the way. There's only one reason why the United States was created, and that was, according to John Locke, I think it was, he said the United States was created purely for the protection of property. Remember, folks, you don't have property. You are users. You're in usufruct. You're in a state of publicity. You're not private, so you can't hold land.
Which brings me to the Revolutionary War, and I know that you and Greg have spoken about this, and you've alluded to it, I'm sure, in many of your shows. It was not fought for slavery. It was, and I kind of learned this through Greg, that he said that it was a way to solidify the control of more land. Now,
the best explanation that I've heard is that, I mean, essentially, you have a nation or a bunch of states that create a nation to take upon itself the burden of the bankruptcy being caused early on, like in the 1790s or whatever, and so you've got a bunch of new states. So originally the 13 states were pledged as collateral for the United States for its bankruptcy, right? So that means all the property and everything. So there is a certain sense of loyalty or pledge, if you will, to the United States by the private people who created it, right? Who constituted it. They're the constituted authorities. And essentially, they're pledging their lands and their properties and everything, their tenements, to back the bankruptcy of the United States. And that has to be redone every 70 years. That's the laws of bankruptcy. And with each new bankruptcy, you have a war, you have 9/11, you have the Civil War, you have the Great Depression, you have the New Deal, etc. You have these sort of events that take place during those times of change. New currencies come along, and so all of a sudden the Civil War era comes along. It's the new bankruptcy, right? It has to be, I can't remember the word, it has to be redone or reorganized, I think is the word. And essentially all these southern states that were new and were slaveholding states, bearing in mind that there were only about a little, according to the census data, only about 1.5, I think it was, 1.8% of whites actually held slaves. If you look at the census reports in, say, Louisiana, down near New Orleans, you saw there were more black slaveholders than white slaveholders. There were certainly more black slave traders, and of course we know that the slave ships and the commercial aspect of it, a couple of Jews have written about how all the slave ships were actually Jewish, and they're quite proud of that fact. To, you know, human trafficking, essentially, which is the modern-day citizenship. So, essentially, from what I understand it, those southern states did not want to pledge their lands for the bankruptcy of this United States that was created so long ago by you know, their forefathers or whatever, their relatives. And so they were like, "Well, no, we're not gonna pledge our lands to the king anymore." Which ultimately, I think, is to the Pope. We're going to keep our lands. It's going to be a free nation. We're powerful and strong enough to do that. Thus, you have Mr. Lincoln, who comes along, and he's got a few good quotes I can read you that let you know his mindset. Because remember, he's the president of the United States, and his only interest is in the Union and keeping the Union together. And of course, that involves the pledge, the bankruptcy pledge, and all of that stuff. So he says in 1958, these are the parts of his speeches that are never read. Right? In 1958, he says, "I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races. I am not, nor have ever been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. There is a physical difference between white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality." That's straight out of Abraham Lincoln's mouth. He was not for, really, I mean, if you read a couple of others, you'll get his real purpose. He says in his 1860 inaugural address, he says, "I have no purpose directly or indirectly to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states." Because remember, each state has its own laws. It's a private people holding lands or plantations. Another word for colony is plantation or farm, by the way. So that's what they were built for, was commerce and slavery.
Things would have sounded much different in speeches if he was actually telling the truth.
Well, he was pretty honest here. I mean, let's face it. Here's what he says. He says, "I have no purpose directly or indirectly to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so." And he really didn't. "I have no inclination to do so." And then he finally says, "My paramount object," and this is 1862, "my paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union." So you had the states wanting to separate from the Union because they didn't want to be pledged in bankruptcy. They didn't want all their property pledged. "And is not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps save the Union." Now, one of the ways that I'm able to understand and figure out things is that I like to put myself in the shoes of whoever I'm trying to figure out. So, you know, if I'm a slaveholder, I think like a slaveholder. If I'm a current congressman or a judge, I talk to people like I'm the judge, and I ask them questions accordingly, where I have the principles of law. If you don't know the principles and maxims of law, you know nothing. And I question people. I say, "Well, prove it. You know, tell me, show me. I'm the judge. Tell me." I put myself in the shoes of evil so that I can understand evil, and I put myself in my own shoes, which I consider to be good, light, if you will, so that I can figure it all out in the terms, comparing it to scriptures and all of that stuff. I physically, well, I should say metaphorically, put myself into the disposition of being evil or being a bad guy, being someone who profits off the misery and suffering of others as my business. That is what I do. That's how I understand these things. And so when I look at Lincoln and I know he was a bad guy, I know all presidents are bad guys, I'm looking at what he's saying. And he's saying, you know, he's the president of the United States, or i.e. the Union. His whole purpose is for the United States. Therefore, he's trying to keep the Union. Therefore, he's going to force those other states, which are required to pledge their lands to the United States for the bankruptcy, well, for collateral, there you go. If they want to leave, then we're going to have to start a civil war. Because guess what? Those northern states, man, they depend on those southern states all of a sudden. Because you had this agriculture, you had this slave race down there. And while those northern states were like, "Nope, we're not going to have slavery. Nope, because we're getting into the industrial age. So we're going to have voluntary slaves from now on." as the 13th Amendment says. So they were starting to depend on that Southern agriculture and Southern slavery for their food supply. So naturally, they're going to be very upset, because where are they going to get their food if they've turned the North into these bustling cities of industry? Or where's the food going to come from? We're in the same, basically in the same place now.
Right. So the Romanization, you speak about that all the time. Where did this bastardization of law or natural law, when did they decide, hey, listen, we're going to change the landscape? Only we are going to know how this whole thing works, and others are just going to be blissfully ignorant, and we'll give them like little, you know, dog treats here and there. We'll teach them a dog Latin, like you, you mentioned a number of times, many times, because it's about the language. Can you speak to that? Like, where, you know, or was this just always in the mix? You know, all the way back. You know, we're going to enslave everybody. The Roman, the Catholic Church. Can you speak to
Catholic? So you got to start again. You got to start thinking in terms of empire, right? And that's hard for people to do because we've been taught that we're free and that we're independent, and we don't know what these words mean. And what does independent mean, right? What do you know what it means? Or are you just saying you know what it means because that's what you're taught, and that's what Alex Jones tells you, and that's what all the parrots in the Patriot Movement tell you? Well, that's what independence means. That's what freedom means. That's what being free means. No, actually, being free means in the political realm or in the legal realm, it means you have a franchise, which means you have a citizenship that you take around in commerce. And you, again, the whole story, right? So free means franchise. That's the legal term free, right? When you're looking at it from the side of who gives you your freedom, who's granting you your rights because you haven't reserved any rights, because you're not private, you're public, your rights come from government, and it's your right. I always like to tell people to look up Title 42, Section 1981, if you want to know what your rights are, because, again, you say, I have rights. No, what you have is what's been assigned to you. You have a certain group of words that they call rights, and in this case, it's a statement of equal rights, Title 42, Section 1981. I keep telling people they should make a T-shirt out of this. It says you have the right to be put in pain, punished, taxed, licensed, and extorted, or exacted, which means take something that is not someone's due. That's what police do. Your right is to be put in pain, punished, taxed, licensed, and extorted. Those are your rights.
And
that's
Title
public 42, law.
Is Title 42, Section 1981.
Section 1981.
Of what document?
That's U.S. Code.
U.S. Code, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, you see these things, you start to realize, oh, crap, all these words that I thought were good things that are parroted all over to sell me DVDs and food products and all that, maybe they're not such good words. If I actually look at them honestly without any, you know, interpretation, without any preconceived notions, without anything like that, well, then I can see what it means. And it goes back to the origin of the word, not the etymology. Please bear that in mind. Etymology is a very important study.
Can you explain etymology? Because some people, I mean, if we don't know what some of these simpler words mean, etymology is like...
Yeah, well, etymology would be the how was the word created, and then how was it sort of recreated into the next language? What was the Greek word for, let's say, boy, right? Well, in the Greek it was this, in the Roman it was this, Latin it was this, and in the ancient the Hebrew it was this, and etc. Those are the origins of the words, how they get sort of passed on through different empires, etc. But then you have, that's etymology. Mm-hmm. The study of the origin of words. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about necessarily. What we're talking about is something that's re-established. It's another language. It's called art. It's called artifice. Technology is another word for art. So it's taking, you know, if you look at etymology, a lot of it has to do with nature. In other words, I point to a flower, I really mean flower. I point to a man, I don't point to the man and say, oh, that's a person, or that's a citizen, or that's a this, or that's a... it's just a man, right? I know what it is. It's self-evident. I don't need to go to court and say I'm a man. I mean, come on. You have to be an idiot to tell a judge that. So that's etymology. That's sort of the language, the vulgar language, as they call it. And then there's the higher language, which is the one they create. Now people say, wait a minute, it's not high. It's not my higher language. What are you talking about? Bible? What do you mean the Bible's the higher language? What are you talking about? Well, it's their creation, man. The Bible's the king's Bible. It's the king's law. It's the law, period, end of story. If you don't know the Bible law, you don't know the law at all. You don't know the principles and the maxims. And so you have to study all these things together. If you want to understand the evil part of law, you have to understand the good part of law, which comes literally from scriptures. Oh, that can't be true. Well, if you read the maxims of law, you'll see a scripture. The foundational maxims or principles of law, you'll often see a scriptural reference or some other. Scripture, by the way, does not necessarily mean Bible. Scripture can mean just any ancient knowledge. So, you know, you have this foundational sort of thing, and that's where we get all these ideas out in the Patriot movement or Truth movement about well, contract law says this. What do you mean contract law? Which law are you under? Are you under contract law? I don't know any contract law. The contract makes the law. That's one of the maxims of law, but there's no such thing as contract law. Law, because the contract itself creates the binding relationship to law. You have no contract law. There's not really such a thing as a set of laws that have to do with contracts. The contract itself makes the law. So you have all these different forms of law, and they don't have to be a constitutional or unconstitutional, because we're not parties to the Constitution. The only people who are parties to the Constitution are the private people of each individual state. They created it, or their posterity did, their bloodline. And
so Obama...
They reserved...
Obama has a bloodline lineage to Jacob Dunham, the sure. Dunham House, and he is, like most of some of your new blog posts that you've updated recently are showing that this is a bloodline thing. And
well, you don't have a choice. Again, this is conspiracy. This is the hard part to remember. I used to think of this stuff, you know, looking at the bloodlines of the Illuminati and all this, and I'm like, why are all presidents related to King John, you know, in the first degree? What's going on here? Why are all presidents related to George Washington? Why are they all cousins? Why is it that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and anybody that's running for president is always a cousin? And I'm like, well, it's just part of the conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. It's not some family that just keeps getting in there. They're the people. See, this is what we don't understand, is they are we the people. We are not. We are the commonalty. We are the lowest class of slave. It's called voluntary servitude in the 13th Amendment. Okay, we are the lowest form, and we are not allowed to be president. All these elections, they're fraud. They're the popular vote, which means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and you mentioned the beginning of the Corporation Nation documentary, which is available on YouTube for anyone who wants to get out there. Many, many different YouTube works that Clint's done. In there, it says about that, about the bloodline lineage, but more so was I kind of lost track about what I was as I was getting your information out there. For people to check out, I kind of lost track about what I was going to say.
Well, it's simple, man. The Constitution is it's very clear. You know, what's the establishing statement, the preamble? What does it say? It says, this Constitution is for ourselves and our posterity. All right? It then defines white persons, right? What's a white person? Well, it's a very strict set of races. It includes Jews. It includes this. It includes this. It doesn't include that. Right, so you have a people who and again, I used to think, oh, this can't be, and then you think about it logically and reasonably, and of course, man, anybody who sets up a corporation for everybody. No, you set up a corporation so that you can pass it on to your children. That's what the United States is. It's a municipal corporation. It's nothing else. And the fact that we're part of a municipal corporation instead of a state, which is a people, makes us a lower class. It's that simple. See, you never start anything for all people. There's no nation on earth that is for all people. This is part of the patriotic illusion, is that we're part of that. No, we are aliens. We're aliens. We're total aliens. We're foreigners, basically. And so we out here in the common public, we citizenships of the United States, are the subjects, the servants, the agents of our principle, which is the people of the States United, the private or several means private states. State means people. So when you see, I mean, you can see the old debates that they wanted the Constitution, the guys who were against the Constitution, and there were a lot of them, they said, no, don't put the word state, put the word people, even though the words mean the same thing. I'm sorry, they didn't want the word people, they wanted the word state. Even though the words mean exactly the same thing, people makes it sound like it's trickery. It's oh, well, everybody's the people. No, it's very clear. It's only ourselves and our posterity, our bloodline. So what I'm trying to get at is you can't think of the fact that, like I used to, that it's a conspiracy, a separate conspiracy. It's all one big conspiracy, a plan between bloodline families to, as every nation is, to get together and form a state, a union, a nation, whatever, under the law of nations for commercial purposes. That is why they create this. And you got to admit to yourself at some point, since, you know, yeah, if I were to create a United State, if I were to create a state, I would do the same thing. I would say, this state, I'm establishing this land, this territory, into a people, and we're going to call it, say, California, and it is for my immediate family and no one else. Sure, the Chinese can come, the Indians can come, everybody else can come, but the land itself, it's our land. We're commercially inviting and opening our borders to everybody. That's why we created the United States, so that everybody filters into the United States, becomes a citizen, and then is a foreigner in the state, is controlled by the state government, right? The commercial government, in other words, which is a fiction. But the people are the real thing. The state itself, if I say California, if I say Ohio, I mean a specific family of people who are the landholders according to their own law.
Like Rockefeller's in Arkansas.
Sure. But that means that the president of the United States, of course, again, it's right there in the Constitution. The Constitution is surprisingly forward about this stuff when you actually know what you're looking for and what you're reading. When you figure out that you're not the people, and to show the difference between what a people is and what a common people is, people being capitalized and common people being just a more attuned to everyone or all the commonality. The word people is actually a verb, and it is what you do when you create a colony or a plantation or a farm. You people it with either men, working men, slaves, cattle, pigs, chickens, whatever you put on that land, you are peopling the land.
So basically, popular people means populating.
Yes, absolutely. It's a verb, right? So you call that the common people, and then on top, you know, who's the landholder? Who's the master of all of those foreigners that you're peopling to do your dirty work, to be your mercenaries, your police forces, who are you actually?
Landowners.
Right, and those are the landlords. Those are the fan. That's the family. That is the conspiracy. There is no other conspiracy because, you know, it's a king. The people
they
just is
claimed it a long time ago. They claimed right. It a long time ago, and they make the rules.
Sure, it looks it's a king. If you look up king, it doesn't mean one man. It means a sovereignty, and that's again where we're mixed up with the notion of sovereignty we say sovereign citizen, which is essentially an oxymoron when it comes to the public. You've got
and I can't, sovereign and a citizen because citizen
well,
means you.
I can't stress enough that you can't be private and public.
Okay, so public, private is Barack Obama, and I don't I'm not left or right, so I don't just sit here and bash Hillary and Obama all day long. Is he a legal fiction? Is Barack Obama? Did he create that name as a legal fiction, or did he just wake up one day and say, "I want to be Barack Obama"? That's who I want to be.
No, I have something in all these thousands of pages about that, and I'm trying to remember where it is and what it was. But essentially, what these guys do is they, I'm private, which means when you're a private man, you're not participating in interstate commerce. You're in your state, you're in your people. That's all you do.
And
if I'm going to
participate in it, right?
Well, if I'm going to, then I'm gonna operate a trust, which is what we're doing. Basically, we're operating in an agency called Citizenship, where we're the agent. United States is our principal, our domicile, and then we reside, which means temporary living, temporary residence, in the state. So we're foreigners to the state. So the state is our third party, right? That's the law of agency. United States is principal. We're the agent for service of process. We run the fiction. We run the person, the straw man, if you will. I run Clint Richardson as a public entity in interstate commerce. It's why I need a license and why I need everything to operate. And then the state government is the third party. But the principal to the third party is, of course, the people of the state. I'm in Utah, right? So you find that the electors for president are generally the landholders as well, the private people operating in a trust. That's the only way that they can enter into commerce.
The electoral college is the landowners or no?
From what I understand, that seems to be the case. The electoral, the state secretary of state for the state of, I think, North Carolina, I have it in my blog. She came out and she said, when you're voting for president, you're not actually voting for president. You're voting for and to legitimize the electoral college. That's all you're voting for in the public. And if you actually look, what's amazing, and it's right there in your face, is if you actually look at the statistics for the world on which countries or which nations have a direct presidential election where the people, the common people, actually do elect the president, you find that China has a direct president, that supposedly communist country, right? But America has an indirect election. We don't elect our president. We go through $1 billion of campaigns and media blitzes and all this stuff to keep us in the motion, to keep us believing that our popular vote is what elects the president. But here's the Secretary of State for North Carolina or South Carolina saying, hey, your vote only justifies and legitimizes the vote of the Electoral College, which generally follows the public opinion, but not always. We had Gore, we had several elections in history where the Electoral College voted differently. Most states, they say, it's actually would be against the law if the Electoral College didn't vote as the public did. But I mean, it's really interesting the way the system actually works compared to what we've been fooled into believing.
Right. So we have a conspiracy, but it's not like there are malicious conspiracies, but at the core of this, it's just, hey, this is what was done. We didn't really kind of let you in on all of the details. And
well, you're either the creator, you're either God, which means you're the part of the sovereignty, or you're the subject, you're the servant, you're the creation. Well, that's what a United States citizenship is. It's the creation of a creator, of a God. That's why they call them magistrates. Magistrate means God. That's your president. That's your governors. That's your judges. That's your you know, that's why they're magistrates. Look it up, man. It means God. And that's not, you hear that for the first time, you're like, oh, well, that's blasphemy. That's the way the system's worked forever, right? So you talked about, you're either private and you're thus part of the posterity, part of the creator, or you're public. And the only way you can be public is that you've accepted subjection and servitude, pledged your allegiance to the private people. In other words, pledge our allegiance to the United States, not to any state. We pledge our allegiance to the state. That means we're pledging our allegiance to the people, because state means people, right? And by United States, we're actually saying all people. Although it's really, really, like I said, I can see the design now so clearly. It's crazy. You talked about the notion of Romanization, and probably one of the most important things for people to know is that we've all been Romanized, and what that actually means.
We've been romanced.
Yeah. All those words come from the word Roman, right?
They want to make love to our money.
Yeah. Well, you have the Catholic Church, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Roman Catholic Church. Roman, for all intents and purposes, means pagan. And whatever your personal opinions about paganism are, don't matter in this case, because remember, we're talking about terms of art. We're talking about not the etymology of words, but the artful meaning of a created language.
So artifice.
Right.
Meaning
so artificially.
Artificial.
Yeah, when we're saying the word Catholic, Roman Catholic Church, what we're talking about is the word Catholic means universal. All right. So what's really interesting is, you know, I started looking into the notion that we're a Christian nation here in the United States, and other nations in Europe are called Christian nations. I'm like, how can a nation be Christian? Right? I mean, to be a Christian, you actually have to read the Bible, do what the Bible says, follow in the footsteps of Christ. You have to do all this stuff. But wait a minute, a nation can be Christian? How is that possible? Has nothing to do with anything that you might think. Has nothing to do with the notion of following the Bible. What it has to do with is that the word Christian is not in the Bible, except as an epitaph, except as an insult, almost. So if you say you're a Christian, you're basically saying you're a pagan. That's the trick. Because if you're part of a Christian church in the United States or any other nation, you're part of a denomination. Nomen means name. And nation, of course, you know, denomination of the Roman Catholic or Universal Church, which is Christianity, right? So we can't mistake Christ and Christ's teachings in the Bible with Christianity, which is the Roman pagan church. Now, the Christians in Rome were the guys sitting up in the Colosseum, you know, drinking their mead and cheering every time an actual follower of Christ was thrown into the Colosseum to be eaten by the lions, because you can't control someone who's actually following the Bible. Plenty of quotes out there that say a Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved, that sort of thing. If you know what the Bible tells you, you'll never join a church. The Bible tells you your body is the temple. You know, you'll never pledge an oath to any nation. You'll never be part of a nation. You'll never do any of these things that we do. You'll never be a citizenship.
You'll never take an oath with it, right?
Yeah, you'll never be surety for another, which is what straw man or strumanius homo means. You never do any of the things we're doing. Mm-hmm. You never be public. You're always going to be private. And you're God. Yeah. You're going to follow the law of God, which is the natural law, essentially. It's a little more deep than that, obviously. But it's really what it is love and charity, which excludes money, right? Obviously, every church out there is 501c3. Corporation, which means artificial person. You go look in the Bible, it says over and over and over, do not respect any persons. No persons of men, no flattering titles. And what is Christianity but a flattering title? It means nothing. And to prove that it means nothing, you look in the legal dictionaries where it tells you there's two Well, actually, Webster's 1828, if you look up Christian, there's two forms of Christian. Those who are in charity and piety, in love, following the teachings of the Bible. And there's the kind that are born into it. I'm born into a Christian nation. I'm born a Christian. Well, wait a minute. How can you possibly be an infant? Absolutely no conscious awareness whatsoever and be a Christian. And that's how you tell the difference between all these corporate Christians, all these people who are attending a church that's an artificial person, respecting the person against the Bible, standing up and praying in church, chanting the Lord's Prayer, when in fact Matthew 6, I think it is, says go into a closet and pray privately. Your body is the temple. You don't participate in these, you know, organizations, these artificial persons. You don't do that. You don't chant in public. You don't want to be seen. And that's, you know, the politicians occupy the nicest pews and all that stuff. People go to church to be seen, to make people believe they're Christians. That way they can get better jobs and they can participate in money, the money system more so, and they can get all these benefits. But that's Romanization. That's the Roman pagan flattering title of Christianity that's been totally put upon all churches, all religions, I should say. And that brings me to the most important aspect, which is to define what a religious man actually is.
You mean like Pope Francis?
No, I didn't say satanic. I didn't say antichrist. I said, right. So, let's face it, man. The Catholic Church, what do they worship, right? They've got these saints in the stained glass, and the saints are all, you know, made to look like angels, which just means Anglican. They're sinners that are made to look, you know, all wonderful and religious and pious and all that stuff. But, I mean, you read about their lives, they're horrible people. And then you have Jesus Christ, right, the figurehead there, and he's hanging on a cross, a big old crown of thorns in his head, head drooped to the side, looking dead as a doornail.
Right.
So what are they worshiping? Are they worshiping the living Christ? Are they worshiping the death of Christ? Well, if you're the Pope, if you're literally what the people call the Christ on earth, the heavenly Christ on earth, the Antichrist, anti just means replacement or instead of, if you're the Antichrist, you're going to worship the death of Christ, not the life. That's why they have this crucifix hanging there. And that's why they tell you in the Catholic Church that you're a son of Adam, that you're a son of the fallen man, not a son of God like Christ. You're a son of Adam who fell, who learned from the and took the fruit, which was the fig. If you look up fig, it's really interesting. But you know, you are a product or a sinner that comes from Adam, from man, not from God. You're not natural. You're not a creation of God. You're a creation of sin. And therefore, what the church actually tells you in its doctrines, it says you are a sinner not because you've actually committed any sin. You've contracted the disease. You're a contracted sinner. Well, we know that the devil only operates in contracts, right?
Right.
So they say, you don't have to be ever sin in your entire life, and you're still a sinner. You still need the church. You still need the Pope. You still need to follow Christ, the acting Christ, the Antichrist, in order to actually be saved and be, you know, you have to repent to the church, not to God, right? Which is, I mean,
because they're the only conduit to God.
Yeah. God is, I mean, if you really study the notion of God, it's really worshiping all of everything that is and was and shall be, all of nature, as one single God. It's not a white man in a beard. It's, you know, Jehovah, for instance, means the existing one or the existing supreme permanence of everything. And what's so interesting, dude, the word Jehovah is a verb. It's not a name for a man. It's not a name for an entity. It's a verb that describes the entire living structure of the universe, basically. That is God. So it's the ultimate nature worship when you really get down to it. But then you have all these different doctrines and things that are, that are church related, and then you have paganism, which is the worship of Roman gods, essentially assigning a anthropomorphization, a personification onto, you know, water or earth or fire or whatever, Mars, Jupiter, you know, that ultimately is what paganism is not the worshiping of nature as it's been taught. Paganism is the worshiping of it's polytheism. It's having more than one god. And again, if you understand what that means in law, then you understand why we're all so screwed, because we're acting like pagans. We're worshiping several gods, and the Bible says, have no god before me, right? Man, think about what that means. Have no god before creation. Have no god before truth, before nature, before reality. And one of the things the Bible says is, I mean, it's very clear, you know, when you understand it, it says, all of the gods of the nations are idols. Well, okay, that brings us full circle. What is a god? It's a magistrate. It's a pope. It's a bishop. You know, these are the Christ figures, the Christ heads. Right. And they tell you this in their doctrine. I mean, they're not shy about it. They say you can only go to heaven through us. It's total bunk. And so you compare that. Yeah. You compare that with the law, and you see that the two absolutely, everything about the law and everything about the Bible coincide with each other. And it's all about choice. That's why I say, you look at what the problem is, Shelley, it's us. It's about choice, man. It's our choice. It's our volunteerism as public servants, as public people. That is the problem. There's no other problem. There's no other problem. And that's why people don't like me, because I tell them that they're the problem. You can't blame the president. You can't blame the government. You can't. They're not doing anything. Government is a non-existent thing that only comes alive when we breathe life into it. We individually are the problem. And if the Bible says your body is the temple, you better start paying attention to that.
It's very easy.
The only way you're going to get out of the public sphere is to become private, become basically a follower of Christ.
Well, it's funny because I do a lot of computer work. I mean, I've done computer work almost my entire working life. And so I'll work on, Macs. I'll work on Windows systems. I'll touch systems, whether remotely or physically. And then if something goes wrong with that computer after I touch it, it had to be me or whatever I did that caused it to happen. It couldn't be the person who was using the system like 99.9% of the time. Nobody wants to take responsibility for anything. And of course, in no way do they want to take responsibility for the world the way that it is today.
Nope.
They don't want that. They don't want that in any way, shape, or form. I tell you what, Clint, this holiday or whatever you choose to do with it, your mom, you're going to go home and see your family. You know, they should look at you and say, you know, we're really proud to, you know, hopefully that's what they're going to say. Oh, you know, we know.
No.
I know you said a few things, but if you can get some, you know, from mom, if you can say, I like what you're doing and things like that, that'd be great. I like what you're doing. A lot of other people really look up, you know, I don't know if that's what you want out, and I know that's not what you want out of this, but people do look up to you for doing the homework that really, like, not too many people want to do. And I think you really kind of touched a lot of people in a way. And I hear that in your callers when they call up and talk to you about what how you, Daniel and Patrick Jordan have kind of, really kind of moved them in a good direction. So
I appreciate it, man. It's a spiritual journey.
It is.
And again, you understand what spiritual actually means. It means living in pure and utter faith, which just means truth, right?
Right.
So you don't have to be confused. You know, when the Catholic Church or some other church says faith, they mean their particular doctrine and all the crap that they teach. But when the Bible says faith, it means literally faith in nature, faith in all things real, without any artificialness, without any names or flattering titles, without any governments or all of that. That's why, you know, once I figured that out about the Bible, then I'm like, oh, crap, how do I tell people like myself who've hated the Bible, despised it because of all these religions, how do I possibly tell them that it's actually the key, it's the answer to everything? If you can just read it and look up every word in the Strong's Concordance and all the different dictionaries and actually understand what each word means, all of a sudden everything starts making sense. It totally explains the law. It explains how man's law will totally corrupt nature in artifice, in artificiality. And you understand that sin is just anything artificial, anything you're respecting that's artificial.
An iPad.
So, yeah, well, anything. I mean, you know, I don't think all technology is necessarily a bad thing. I think what it boils down to is intent. And I think what's happened, the best way I can describe the difference between the public sphere and the private sphere is that in the law of equitableness, equitable, to be equitable means to be in harmony with the natural law, which means, you know, out there, if I commit the crime of killing somebody, mm-hmm. they're going to look at my intent. They're going to see, you know, an equitable fashion or equitable jury or court, they're going to say, well, was your intent to kill this person? Well, it was late at night, pitch dark, and some kid ran out in front of my car and I killed the kid. Was it murder? Because he was chasing his ball at a really inopportune time. Did I intend to do that crime? Or Can I show you that it was not my intent, right? But you see, that is a private, equitable state of law. That is the natural law, where intent is 9/10 of the law. But you go into what we call the public law or the legal law, it becomes strict, or strictum mihi juris, I think is the official name, strictum juris. That means that it doesn't matter what your intent is. You no longer live according to intent. All you live for, people, is to be the agent of your principal. Everything you do is on the behalf of your principal. The taxes you pay, everything you do is to the intent of commercially supporting these people that we're talking about, these private people, these landholders.
They'll decide what your intent was.
Right. So no crime has to do with intent in this legal system. Sometimes they'll consider intent, don't get me wrong, there's good judges out there who certainly know how corrupt this system is, but it's their bread and butter, right? We all sell out. So you have to know that your intent, if I kill somebody in this realm, then I'm destroying a commercial entity, because the only way the commercial entity, the straw man, the surname attached to the Christian or good name attached to the bad name, right, the birth certificate name, that legal entity created by the birth certificate, the only way that thing has life, which is a legal term for existence, fictional existence, is if I breathe life into it. If I act as Clint Richardson, that's the only way Clint Richardson has any life, any ability to affect things in reality. So if I am killed, or if I kill somebody else with a fictional title, a fictional name, then I've committed only a financial crime. Nothing right, else matters, because exactly. It's just commercial.
You said that any number of times, and that was one of the things that just really, really struck me when you said, remember, folks, all crimes are financial.
Yeah.
I'm like,
this is mammon.
Yeah, it's mammon. Yeah. And so, I say that to people now. I say, listen, if I kill you, the court is looking at me and saying, hey, you killed this guy's profitability. They don't really care about him.
You damaged United States property that had a commercial value. You now have to pay for your crime, either with cash, as the wealthy do, or with time, which is the same thing as cash. Because cash, money, is only a symbol of labor. This is why you go to prison and you become, as the 13th Amendment declares, as long as you're convicted of a crime, you could be turned into a slave, of an involuntary servant, an involuntary slave. That is what the 13th Amendment says. Convict you of a crime, then they could put you in jail and make you work. That is how you pay for your crimes in the legal sphere, because no intent matters.
And people that don't know just think, well, you involuntarily killed my loved one, or you did it on purpose, and they make it like this dramatic subplot.
Well, this goes back to licensure. What's our intent? Well, our intent doesn't matter as long as we have a license to kill or a license to harm. That's the ultimate thing. People talk about the natural law and having responsibility and the do no harm, you know, Satanist sort of thing. But really what it boils down to is intent. Because I can do no harm, and I can still be harming so many people. That's the system we live in. We are actually seeking permission through licensure, through legal law, to harm other people. We're in constant competition. Our intent is purely money. Because remember, you know, why are kids nowadays having such a hard time? You know, you start thinking about families and children being such brats and horrible. They have nothing. I mean, there's nothing that their parents can offer them because their parents sold them out. Their parents before them probably sold them out, and you know, all the way since the early 1900s, the birth certificate process, corruption of blood, no lands, nothing to leave their children. Right? There is nothing that you can leave your children except a piece of paper. And this is another thing I figured out, man. There's only one way for an heir to exist, and that's by descent, by blood. Everything else is legal. Everything else is according to the law. Right. So in that case, why do we need a will? You know, these people, the law recognizes descent as the utter and utmost perfect title, right? So if I die, my heirs get my land. Unless I corrupt that lineage, unless I corrupt that blood by birth certificate process or whatever, naturalization, nativity is another word that means to be, you know, born or stuck in a nation. The word nation means to be born in or to be born. So you're becoming, again, a son of the people, son of the state, and so you're a ward of the state. You no longer are an heir. Your father is the state, not the man with the land. So therefore we need a will. The will is obvious. Why did they found this country? For their posterity, for their blood, for their children. What are we going to do with our homes and our lands that we believe we own, which we don't? Well, it's of course we're going to leave it to our children. We're going to carry on our legacy, our blood, our family, whatever. But you see, the whole purpose of this Pirate Cove, the whole purpose of this scam, which is called cheat or escheat.
Right. I've heard that.
The whole purpose is to steal the land. And the only way you can do that is to corrupt the lineage, to corrupt the blood, to make everybody into a public capacity, into a citizenship of the United States, not of the state, and therefore there's no heir. That way the land reverts back to the United States, which ultimately means it reverts back to whatever state or people that control the state.
Right.
It's the law of reversion. So I have no heirs to leave anything to. At some point in my lineage, at some point in my family's history, they were tricked into this process. They gave away their lands. They gave away their ability to have heirs. Even though they had children, they abandoned them. They delivered them, just like you deliver land. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that I have to leave my children. So what I have to do is I have to make a will. Private people don't make wills. It's by law. The land will automatically go to the landholder, to the heir.
Clint, is there something that you can do at this juncture? Obviously, there's a house that you grew up in the California area, correct?
Yeah.
You know, and so obviously, well, you're in your 40s. Your parents, or I guess your mom. I'll use your mom as an example. How could you secure that property there, saying that maybe you wanted it or you didn't want to live there?
Well, the question is, can I?
Because my sister lives in that area, in the foothills of the Sierra Mountains.
Well, the question, the proper question is, can I get that property into an allodial status, what they used to call fee simple, or in the best probably word for it is perfect title, where the title's not defected, where it's, you know, it's not a public thing, it's a private thing.
And we're hearing more about that now, for sure, about these titles that are defective.
Sure.
Like over the last couple of years, for sure.
Well, any title in a public capacity is a defective title because it's affected. It's not unique. It's not private. You only own it, quote unquote, for the use and enjoyment and usufruct. You don't have the right of disposal. Yes, you can sell the paper title, the defective title, but you have no disposal rights of the actual land. Right, so the title gets, like, my mom can leave Clint Richardson the title. That's about all she can do in her will. Mm-hmm. The fact that she needs a will means that I'm not actually her child, that she's my custodian or guardian, that she abandoned me to the state, and therefore she's writing a will or praying or pleading to the
Why
court.
Can't she just give it to you? Why can't she just say, okay,
I don't think people really grasp this, that a private person, a private individual, would not need anything except here's my family Bible, here's the lineage of my family, we're a private people, the land has never been incorporated, it's never been put into the public sphere. It's not even a question of, well, where am I going to leave my land? The law is it's clear. It's there is honor in the law. That's the funny part about it, is the basic part of law, the foundations, the principles at their lowest, I should say highest level, is it's scriptural, it's private, it's, and then from there everything just starts falling to pieces because like the Bible, again, you have the choice. You have the right to contract. You have the, and that's Title 42, Section 1981 as well. It says you have the right to contract. And that's a very important aspect of citizenship, of course, because you contract disease, right? Dis-ease.
Right. So basically what you're saying is that the law has to have an ingredient of legitimacy, create that structure, and then bastardize it.
Yep. You have to have a choice, man. So your question is, you know, can I do something about it? The question is, really, do I want to do something about it? Because that house is in the middle of everyone else who's public. Do I want to, you know, I would actually rather sell that house and buy some private land somewhere. Because land is the ultimate freedom. I said in the beginning, we have no place to go. We have nothing to put our feet on. We're of the water. We're of the sea. We're constantly floating in a citizen ship. We have no place to put our feet. We never touch the land, right? We're not men of the land or whatever all that crap is. No, your citizenship, unless you have your own private sanctuary, your own private land, your private castle where the law doesn't affect you, the public law, which is the positive law, which is all of United States law. Right. Then you can't be a free man. You can't be any of these guru concepts of being on the land. You're not on the land. By the way, just so we're clear,
Let me be clear.
When we talk about the law of the land, that is an ancient concept. Nothing new in America. That's an ancient concept. Mm-hmm. And all it means in this country is due process of law. That's all it means, due process of law. Well, if you're under the public law, if you're under the commercial law, then your due process of law is only commercial. You have no property. They can't steal property that you don't have. They just take it back and put it into their eminence, right? Their eminence is something that is assigned to cardinals of a church. Domain means the higher form of residency. You're only a resident. Your domain is only the United States. Mm-hmm. you know, you own nothing in the actual geographical areas of the states. That's the point I keep trying to make. Right?
Yeah, we can never own anything.
Nothing can be stolen.
Like you say in Corporation Nation, if you don't believe me, just stop paying your property taxes. And they'll come and get it.
Right. It's just extortion, right? If you don't pay your protection money, then what happens? I mean, that should, of all things, make it obvious that you're... Yeah. Well, I'll put it to you this way. A private man pays no taxes. Taxes are only for public people.
That's right. We are tenants indeed on the land.
Right. So when you go, again, you go back to the Bible, you see that there was some point where Caesar... And Caesar just means district or seizure. Mm-hmm. So we're really, it's the United States of Caesar, District of Columbia. There was a point in the Bible where it says Caesar taxed the entire population. And you look up what taxed actually means, it means registered.
Right.
Because you cannot, Caesar can only tax what is Caesar's. Caesar, the District of Columbia, can only tax its persons, its citizenships, its adventures, its, you know, all those different words that fit what we are, its commercial entities. It cannot tax me unless I'm surety for him, or for it, I should say. Unless I'm surety for the straw man, unless I'm surety for this legal entity that was created at birth... there's no tax. The tax goes to the law, the tax, everything applies to the public person, the status that's assigned to me, that's owned by the United States, and that I'm renting.
Okay.
So there is no tax that exists except in the fiction, attached only to the fictional person,
right,
where all the law is attached. And again, this is where the maxims of law come in. That's where the contract makes the law. It is a tacit and express consideration that if I'm operating in public personhood, in United States citizenship, then I am bound by the United States law. It would be ridiculous to think anything else.
Right.
I don't care what any guru out there tells you. Remember, I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm not here to tell you that there's some remedy or solution out there in the public sphere. No, the only solution is to get the hell out,
right,
to cancel out the connection between the Christian name and the surname, the get rid of your numbers, get rid of your property, get rid of everything that you think is yours. You got to be, I mean, if you want to be free, let's face it, man, follow the model of Christ, right? The only free man in history. What did he have? He had nothing. He had the shoes on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
He had the robes on his back, which he would have gladly gave to anybody who didn't have, right?
Right.
If you're not willing to give up everything that you've earned by using Caesar's name, registered name, then you're not going to be free. You're going to be enfranchised, the legal meaning of free, right? If you're not willing to give up all this stuff, all these things, all this illusion of property and all this stuff, if you're not willing to give that up, then you're right where you belong.
Right.
You're going to be a slave.
Insurance.
Voluntarily.
Okay, so this is totally not the end of your journey. You're going to be doing other things. You have a pamphlet that you've been working on. I guess I want to call it your life's work, in a sense.
Yeah, thus far.
And there's still more to come, because even you, I mean, there's probably things that, you know, in the Corporation Nation documentary, that things that you've learned past that point that that you could, you know, maybe revise, or things as you learn and go down the road. You've met Daniel. You met a man by the name of KW who have created their own private entity now, or not, who are not part of the system. Is that correct?
Well, they took two different approaches, similar but different. One's in Canada, so that makes it a little bit of a difference too. KW, he actually ended up suing. His whole purpose was to sue the state of, I think it was Ohio,
mm-hmm,
which means to sue the people, by the way, for tricking his parents into doing exactly what we've been talking about, giving up their heir, giving up their property, giving up their lands, their estate, through trickery, through the birth process. And he sued for, he was suing for some ridiculous amount, like $1.5 billion. And he ended up winning his case and getting hundreds of thousands of dollars plus yearly payments from the state for damages. And if you think about what the damages were, well, hey, here I am, a public entity going private. Now the court has acknowledged him as private, and apparently he's gotten some new form of ID that's not ID. In the Bible, he referred to it as a white stone. That if you had the white stone, you could basically go anywhere and pass anywhere. Now, I have a problem with that, because what he did was he changed legal statuses. He went from being public to private, which means essentially he went from being slave to slave master. And I kind of have a problem with that. I sort of look at that and I say, well, hopefully he's going to go farther and not use, you know, because what you can do is you can take the Bible, for instance, and you can make it justify your actions by ignoring some things and promoting others. And I get the notion that KW still has a journey ahead of him, that he will, hopefully he will do more what Daniel did, which was to just absolutely sever all ties to government, cancel out the birth certificate, literally, crossing out the surname, the last name, and writing void and getting it notarized, going through that process, and then saying, hey, look, I am purely, he calls himself an ambassador of Christ. And he walks the path, man. He doesn't use money except in a private capacity where he needs to. In other words, his intent is not to participate in any kind of commerce that's interstate that would cause him to be.
But there is part survival. Of the there is a survival. So I mean,
right? I mean, you're not going to get. Yes, money is the root of all evil, absolutely. But you're not. You're in a system where everybody respects it. You could literally probably starve if you didn't participate in it at some point. You have to be reasonable.
Right, that's what Greg and Greg's fear, and then he conveyed that to me about your conversations. You know, like you want to disconnect, and he's like, well, there's so many things that need to be considered. Now, some of the things that I derived in my head about all of this is, if you could find someone who is a private citizen, you could work with public citizens. So they say a private citizen has money, say they sue and they get, you know, they get money for land, they purchase that land, and then the public, he has a few public entities that go into that land, and then they pay a certain amount of money to him for them to stay on that land. That way he can have money, the private person can have money to spend outside. But you're moving in a direction of getting away from the system. But these big steps,
right,
that KW took and Daniel took in this direction, they took this big step, but then just like the baby steps that got them to the point of the realization to make that big step, now there's other little baby steps that have to go.
Think about what those considerations are. You're going to find that they're all artificial. They're all legal. They're all fake. There's nothing to do with nature, nothing to do with reality. It's all, well, what about, you know, how do I drive, or how do I travel? How do I do? How? And the truth is, you just do. I mean, what people are looking for is a guarantee. Mm-hmm. People want insurance. They want to be insured in their transactions. That's what your driver's license is, man. That's what your identification or your ID entity is. You're literally taking yourself, personifying it, creating an artificial person out of it, respecting it, and saying, okay, if I, again, it's a financial transaction. Everything you do, it's protected by consumer protections and insurance and FDIC and all these different things. That is what drives people crazy, is to think of actually being out there and truly free. See, people don't think about that. Oh, that means no insurance. That means that everything I do, I'm totally responsible for. I can't say, well, yeah, you can just, you know, I ruined your property here. Here's my insurance information.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
That's the thing that people are most concerned with, from what I can tell. And even if they're conscious of it or not,
fear.
It's that all of a sudden, no, nothing's backing you except God.
The fear of the unknown.
Right, except your own actions, your own responsibilities. That's
well,
it.
I went for a large portion of time, probably 2 years, not having insurance. And, of course, the only thing that really irked me was the whole Obamacare thing. Is like, you know, am I going to, what kind of penalties am I going to pay? But then I just didn't even really care because I would, honestly, this might sound crazy, but I would rather die of my own volition than go into this medical system and be murdered by it. And I'll get into that next.
A life extension itself is kind of a frightening concept.
Yeah.
Right? You're extending a life that really should not be extended a lot of the times. And I don't say that as a, you know, don't get me wrong, not eugenics, not any of that stuff, or right to die. Or say, I'm saying that a lot of this stuff that they do is torture. It's not life.
This is improved in, well, I guess I hate to use that word. I don't want to say that you proved anything, but this is hell. In your conversations, speaking, this is hell that we're living on. The fiery pit of hell doesn't exist. The Jews are right.
Well,
this is hell.
Yeah, like you know, if your body is the temple, utopia is a word that basically means the middle of nowhere. So in other words, pure nature without man's footprint, right? Technology is really the only thing that can harm that. So we actually live in these concrete jungles.
Yeah.
And when a weed grows, we think it's evil, right? Nature trying to reclaim itself.
It's a wrapped up.
Yeah, so I mean, if you think about it, yeah, that is hell. The concepts of hell that are put forward by the church, all the pictures and the images, absolute bunk. It has nothing to do with what the Bible is actually trying to tell you, right? So these are just fear tactics to make you come and be a good son of Adam. So, and you know, this goes back to the you know, you asked me earlier about the Roman things that are Romanized. If I Romanize something, I'm Latinizing something. And remember, the English language, you can look it up in Black's Fourth edition, dog Latin is the English, the grammatical system of the English language. In other words, it's a very dumbed-down language that when we speak, we're speaking Latin terms in the English set that are being taken as the old Latin terms in their true meaning. And so to Romanize means to Latinize or to fill with Latin words or modes of speech. This is the hard part for people, because they don't want to sit there and study language. They think they know the language. They think I'm a fool for spending so much time on language. And yet here it says in Webster's Dictionary that says to Latinize something is to fill with Latin words or modes of speech, which means to convert to the Roman Catholic religion. Again, Catholic means universal. It does not refer to being a religious man. It refers to being a citizen of the United States or some other nation that is Romanized. You look at the United Nations, it says our goal is to Romanize all of these different places into a naming, a Roman or Latin naming system. You means to conform to Romish opinions or the customs, modes of speech of Romans. So we have been Romanized, not by some, you know, military, not by, it's the words. Nothing else matters but the words that you speak in the capacity that you're speaking them. We are all speaking our words while 100% of the time being assumed to be United States citizens, fictions of law, therefore every word we say is taken in its Romish or Roman Latinized version. And because we've been taught this dumb language, we all think we're all smart, but we're actually absolute idiots barking at each other, basically. And meanwhile, every word we say is getting us in trouble because we don't know the language.
Yeah. It's definitely something that takes a long time, and that's why I say you've done a lot of the homework for people, and that's something. Do not, you know, why search for true freedom when we're already free? So it's really a total deception there. Now you speak to Patrick Jordan every Monday night for a number of at least these 2 years now. I want to reach out to Drew and say thank you so much for – he put a spreadsheet out. I don't know if you got this, Clint. I'm pretty sure you did. He put a spreadsheet out of every single one of Clint's broadcasts and like a blurb in there of what was discussed. And then a link in the right-hand side where all you have to do is click on it, and it'll automatically start streaming the episode – all the way back to when Clint, started his Corporation Nation. So thank you so much, Drew. And that is just, for people, in a sense, we really kind of need our hands held in some sense. So what he did was, look, at this time he knew, like, this is coming to an end in some way, shape, or form. I need to be able to get this out there. And I think that was just one of the most amazing gifts that he, that little document, that little electronic document, was an absolute gift.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, when I first started that show, it was 2 years and 2 months or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
I put out I can't remember if it was on my blog or whatever it was. I said, hey, I need someone to help me out here. I need someone just to archive my shows for me, start a website. You don't have to do anything special. And he immediately said, I'll do it. I'm like, great. He's a really, 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 really nice guy. He's up in Canada. Mm-hmm. And, he's been doing it ever since. It's as thankless of a job as any radio show host his job is out here. So, I can only thank him. And, it's been an interesting journey.
and it's not over. It's just going to take it's going to take a different shape, a different form.
Well, this, I'm focusing, I want to focus on finishing this work, as I call it, to call it a book, I guess, unpublished work. And, it's going to be free because I'm not, money. Patrick Jordan's actually a good example because Patrick's very, very keen on saying things like, I'm not going to tell you that because I want you to buy the book. And I'm like, that's a mistake. That's, that shows that your intent is money instead of actually, reading. And I understand that because the guy's going to make a living. But at the same time, I'm like, no, I'm not writing this to make to become a wealthy house slave. I want to enrage people. I want to get people back to a point where they actually have some emotions and aren't just full of apathy about their situation and can actually give them some guidance. At least in the very foundation of everything, which is that Latinized language that we speak, to understand the true meanings of the words we actually use is priceless.
Right.
There's no price that can be put on that.
Right. Is there? I will suggest that if you could figure out a way when it becomes available to lock it, at whatever, I guess, PDF form, to lock it so that no one can, get any crazy ideas. So
it'll be a PDF, and I'll probably be releasing it here pretty soon. I'm gonna print it out. I've got like 700 or 800 pages that I've got pretty much set to go, and I'm gonna have some of my listeners are actually volunteered to read it and edit it for me and that kind of thing. So I'll probably be releasing it as soon as possible. The trick is getting a company out there to actually. Again, I don't want to use the word publish because that means to make public. But, you'll understand once you read it why that's so important. Because, if you put something into the public or you publish something, you're giving it to government.
Mm-hmm.
You're literally putting it in the public domain. What is a public domain? It's not you. It's something that doesn't actually exist except inside of government. Anytime you patent, anytime you copyright, anytime you do any of those things, you're saying, here, government, here's my work. I'm your slave. As your agent, I've created this. Here, you're my principal. Here it is. Please give me some rights of use only. Just like I only have the right to use the house that I registered with government, or the child. I can only use my child. It's not my property anymore. I've given it to government. They've reassigned me certain rights. That's the same thing. That's why I don't want to publish this. I don't want some company to tell me what I can and can't say, or to say, make it smaller, or to edit. No, none of that. None of that. This is a purely private work, and free, absolutely free. That's going to piss them off.
Well, is there any? I'm sure there's people out there that you can get them to do some of these things, and someone who's understanding of when you convey those feelings of what you're doing to them. Hopefully, that comes together. Now, here's going to be a very, very uncomfortable portion of the program, not for you, because you know these things, and you speak to Patrick Jordan a great detail many times. Being as we are part of this corporation nation, and that we don't know who we are commoners, we are tenants indeed on the land, we have a medical system that was created solely to, I believe, to deceive us, to make money, and we are being affected in an adverse way by the drugs, by the, you know, with your opinion, are they murdering us slowly in many different ways? Big pharma, big agriculture, big chemical. Are they doing these things? I mean, is this for real?
Well, it's definitely for real. I mean, it's a very simple process to go through and see all the different different ways that these things are harming us. Absolutely. Now, pharmacopoeia is another word. You know, we look at its origin, and we look at it in the Bible. Pharmacopoeia means witchcraft and poisoning. Okay. That's all it means. Okay, so they're, you know, think about it. What is a drug? It's a poison. It's a potion, basically. It's a compound. It's not something that you find in nature. It's always a creation of man. And the reason that it's a unique combination of things is because the word unique in the patent laws means something that is, what's the word? I can't think of the word. It's in my documentary, actually. And it means that it's original. It's not something of nature, and so you can patent the idea. It's a new creation, in other words. Mm-hmm. That's why you can't really patent life, although they're getting around that slowly by altering all life.
Right.
This is why you have these genetically altered vegetables and stuff. It's not so much to harm as it is to control the food supply. If you can patent the food supply, then you can, you know, he who controls the food controls the population. So, yes, there's a lot of harm going on that which supports each different structure of the system. What me and Patrick, especially Patrick, have uncovered, though, is a more of a purposeful malignment in it all. That yes, these are all military weapons. These are all military grade things that are being put into these vaccines and other drugs. And not to mention, you know, I did a documentary. It's called Lethal Injection. Again, it's free. It's on thecorporationnation.com or just on YouTube. And I cover the U.S. code on biological weapons. And if you actually go read the active biological weapons program, it talks about you as animals, first of all. Us, the common people, is just mere animals, which means soulless. And it says that we can be bombarded with all manner of kinds of things, as long as it's for research or protective purposes or for other. So basically they use these words that basically cover any possible reason that they can think to make testing biological weapons on the population legal. That's right in U.S. code. I cover it again in that documentary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to look at that. You got to say, okay, you know, I found an interview with a guy that works for the military Institutes of Health, and he said, talking about how he dug up the swine flu, or the Spanish flu, excuse me, up in Alaska, the permafrost in Alaska, brought it down to his lab, spent 10 years recreating the genome of the Spanish flu, and then lo and behold, we have the Spanish flu outbreak of 2009, a year later.
Right.
Right, I mean, it's just amazing, the crime, the criminality of it all.
So they are, in your opinion and Patrick's opinion. I would love to do with Patrick what I'm doing with you here today, have the conversation. In your opinion, are they planning a mass culling? I mean, not to be like Alex Jonesy and Mr. Judas Goat, but you think they are planning some kind of mass culling?
I think they've been doing it for a while. It was Greg Quinones who was saying, you know, who told me, you know, you better look at the population statistics. They've been going down, not up. But they can fool you. They can they can show you in the news and in the statistics that they show you that the population in the future is going to be at 20 million or 20 billion and we're all going to die and, you know, starvation, all that. But in fact, the population numbers have been going down. The sterility numbers are incredibly down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, make no mistake that that's from vaccination. The thing I open up with in my documentary on vaccination is the way that they sterilize horses up in Montana area. I can't remember where exactly it was, and the name of it is escaping me. But they inject the horses with basically a pig ovary. It's called zona pellucida. It's pig ovary, and the pieces of the ovary basically attack, your body creates antibodies against anything that is a reproductive organ, and so your body literally attacks itself.
Mm.
And what I've found is that basically anytime you're injecting any animal part, you know, we use monkey kidney tissue, we use, you know, blood serum, that kind of thing, anytime you're injecting any part that is foreign or even human into your body, it's going to cause an immune response. And that immune response, one of the examples I use is squalene, mm-hmm. which is a health supplement that you can eat. If you eat it, not a big deal. It's going through your digestive system and you're getting it correctly. But if you inject it into the body, squalene is basically the lubrication for your joints. If you inject squalene, which is a major, major ingredient and adjuvant, into your body, they say that's what caused Gulf War syndrome.
Right.
The squalene is so similar, because it comes from sharks, it's so similar to your own squalene that you produce naturally in your body that your body starts attacking and developing antibodies against your body's own production because it's so similar. And your body can only produce it's like 1,000 antibiotics, I can't remember the number.
Right.
And so your body starts attacking itself. So all of a sudden you have arthritis, you have joint pain, you have horrible things, lupus, all these different things happening in your body simply because your body starts attacking itself. And you put that across the entire spectrum and you have all the modern diseases that are caused by vaccines. All the dementias, all the prion diseases, all the different forms of disease are simply the body responding and creating antibodies to all of the different animals that are being injected into us, all the different parts, all the proteins. And if you read the vaccine inserts, they're very clear. We can't filter out. When we use this this human aborted fetal tissue that we've cloned over and over from the 1950s or whatever. No, it was when the real reason behind Roe versus Wade, of course, was to start harvesting aborted fetal tissue and using it for the growth of the vaccines. Well, when you're growing a cell substrate, when you're growing vaccine stuff on the cell substrates of animals or humans, that protein, the microscopic particles, they can't filter out. You're injecting another human or some animal part into your body every time. And I thought, you know, that's the moral equation right there. If they're using human aborted fetal tissue, that's got to stop people from taking vaccines. Nope. So, you know, you're talking about an entire a biological weapon. We call it vaccination. And, you know, the history shows that they started vaccination by removing some pus from the bottom of a horse's hoof, making a scratch and rubbing it into the human subject. That was the original form of vaccination. That's how crazy, that's the pseudoscience that it's taken from.
Right.
Never been a study ever that shows vaccines work. Contrarily, you know, there's pretty much no study that doesn't show they don't work. So it's nuts. And so
okay.
Is it a biological weapon? Absolutely. Every proof, every study that you read is a design to somehow screw up either the ability of your body to produce certain functions, whether it's, you know, spermatogenesis or your ability to get pregnant, or it is designed to, it's interesting because vaccine
binary, like a binary thing where they put a little bit of this in and then you go and you eat like some ibuprofen or some acetaminophen. I think Patrick was talking a little bit about that, how it demyelinates
your
herbs and things like that, making them.
That's where your autism, and stuff comes from. The HPV vaccine is notorious for demyelinization, which is just the sheath around your nerve cells, and it just screws you up. Yeah, there's I don't know how to say it, but the way we compare it, Patrick and I are sort of on the same notion when it comes to this, is that we actually both kind of think that there's some force here at work that we don't quite comprehend. Most of the life on Earth is parasitic in nature, and we are of the same opinion, looking back at the Gnostic writings about the Gaia Spore and all these different forms. There are things that happen in nature parasitically that are just amazing, where it causes the animal or the bug or whatever to act against its own best interest in every way possible to allow, to protect the parasite's young while it eats out its guts. And I look at things like what we're doing to ourselves, our geoengineering and these sort of things, both, we're now reseeding the oceans and this kind of stuff. And we're making a world that is more friendly, less oxygenated. Most disease is anaerobic. We're making a world that is more friendly towards the parasite, more friendly towards the extremophobes, and that sort of thing. It's very, very concerning that if we're to get a little bit, philosophical, we could say that the only thing that actually makes sense is that we're parasitically infected by injecting crap into our bodies that shouldn't be there. Right. That kind of thing. So it gets really interesting when you start looking. The National Geographic came out with an article, I think it was last December, maybe earlier than that, and it was titled Zombie Bugs. It was all about parasites in nature and how they cause the bugs and the, to do these crazy, crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites is toxoplasmosis. Everybody's getting familiar with toxoplasmosis, but this one doctor, he said every high-speed motorcycle accident where these guys are just going out, getting an absolute thrill, serving absolutely no purpose, going against their best interests, mm-hmm. Get into a motorcycle accident, die, because, of course, 120 miles an hour down a road doesn't make much sense unless you're maybe being influenced by a parasite that gives you some reward, kind of like it gives a rat a reward for going out and seeking cat pee because it gives it a sexual turn-on. Well, if I'm going down the road on a bike and getting a sexual turn-on or some other a endorphin, well, kind of makes sense. He starts looking, and he finds out that every high-speed motorcycle accident that they do an autopsy on has toxoplasmosis in the brain, something that's causing a pleasurable response by doing something really, really stupid.
And it triggers something else.
So, yeah, and so I'm very concerned that because 80% of life on Earth is said to be parasitic, that there might very well be some legitimacy in many of the ancient texts that talk about God being a, if you will, when I say God, I mean the gods, the archons, being a parasitic infection. I find it to be a very fascinating subject.
There you go. We're about a minute, maybe a minute and a half out. Realityblogger.com. Realityblogger with one G at .wordpress.com. Just type in Clint's name. It's funny, when I type into YouTube, I type Corporation Nation, and I don't get that thing where things start to populate because there's things that get the back seat. But your information is just so incredible. You've done a lot of the homework that most people don't want to do. I look forward to your pamphlet coming out. I want to read it. It's something I definitely will probably read before I even read the Bible. So that's probably something that's.
Well, it teaches you. I mean, I don't want to put myself on any pedestal, but it teaches you how to read the Bible. It says, look at the word. What does the word mean? Don't take it for its vulgar Latin, you know, dog Latin meaning. So it is good for the in that respect, and it does compare the Bible to the law. The legal language is the same language basically as the Bible. It's the King's law. It's the King's Bible. So you know, people need to know this stuff. It's not that they want to know. It's not. I'm not. You know, this is not a desire. This is you need to know this stuff. You know,
Clint, stick with me for a couple minutes after this.
Stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the Hitler soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform Chaminade on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am